Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here. LastWordOnSports.com.
Welcome back to another Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here. LastWordOnSports.com. My name is Russ McKenzie. I am joined now by a guest host tonight, a fine gentleman from Waking the Red by the name of Mitch Tierney. How are you tonight, Mitch?
Not too bad, Russ. How are you doing yourself?
I'm doing all right. It's been a good week. It's been a very good week.
Speak for yourself.
Well, you know, I've enraged people on. I've gotten a chance to enrage people on Twitter again, and that's always fun. I'm just going to throw this out there. We have phone lines now open, 732-707-7994. You can call in. We are covering a host of things tonight around Major League Soccer, the national game in the area, anything North American soccer, we will definitely handle and talk about tonight. As everyone else is off, we have Mitch Tierney of Waking the Red. The Toronto FC, home for SB Nation. Actually, the SB Nation home for Toronto FC, I should say it that way. I really wanted to start off a little bit by talking, just give a little bit of a wrap-up of the weekend for a couple of things. We had two gigantic matches on Sunday, really, kind of larger than life, to be honest. And in Seattle versus LA, which is a huge rivalry, and then NYCFC played New York Red Bulls at Red Bull Arena for the third and final meeting of the season there. And a lot of people had a lot to say about this one because you never know really what you're going to get with NYCFC at this point. Other than you know they're not going to be able to clear a ball to save their lives, and they pretty much did that. It was an interesting, Mitch, from a perspective of somebody who's watching this rivalry just become born in front of him. We're all kind of watching a birth of something that's going to become really special over the next few years, pretty organically. Everyone thinks that it's a manufactured rivalry, but it really has not been. It's been pretty organic between the fans. The banter on social media has been really, really top notch. it's been great. This match really didn't disappoint. And for a while there, I really was wondering, and I was sitting there wondering, watching this game unfold in front of me. I really thought it was NYCFC had their chances, man. They really did, and
they sure did.
If they can get their defending sorted, they could be pretty good. I'm not saying that they're going to, we should hand them an MLS Cup if they get a good center back. But, one of the things that struck me, and as much as you had the Red Bulls breaking them down pretty easily in the first half, I don't know if you noticed, it was like one pass to the midfield and then a pass back out to the wing, and whoever was on the wing, whether it was Lloyd Sam or Mike Grella, was gone. Like totally gone and totally in on goal, very easily in on goal, to be honest. But the other way, especially in the beginning of the second half, you had, you really had NYCFC kind of sort of breaking the Red Bulls down. It didn't amount to anything because they couldn't finish, but it is what it is. By the way, that number again, phone lines are open, 732-707-7994. Regardless of all of that, it was a good game. And I, you know, I'm not going to be the guy that, you know, brings up what happened in the pregame, because that was a sideshow. And really it takes away from what was going on in the arena. Did you watch the game at all?
Yeah, I watched the condensed highlights, of course. Like you said, I think it was New York's game at the start. I should be more specific than that. it was New York City's game at the start, and then Red Bull dominated most of the first half, leading to the second half, and then New York tried to catch up at the end. But I didn't even find New York City FC's defending that bad until the goal. I mean, they looked all right, and then that ball comes in to Bradley Phillips, and that never should have gotten there. I mean, it seemed to mag the defender on the way through. It was a nice ball. I mean, from Lawrence, it was a well played ball, but that never should go through. And then from there, New York seemed to fall apart for a little bit. It was just a good weekend for MLS in general. When you look at the lineups, even like. There's two screenshots that kind of define the weekend for MLS, and they were the New York City lineup and the LA Galaxy lineup. And while it didn't exactly work out for New York, those are two lineups that, when you're talking about the progression of the league, they were incredible to see.
Well, there it is, and let's get into the LA Seattle match a little bit. I'm going to admit it was pregame at Red Bull Arena, and I really didn't watch much of it. But what I did watch was Chad Barrett doing quite possibly the most Chad Barrett thing ever. I think we should call it the Chad Barrett, to be honest.
Yeah.
If anyone hasn't seen this, Chad Barrett scored a goal and then promptly tore his hamstring and was taken off during the celebration, by the way. It was one of the most amazing and sad things I've seen in a while. Because he's kind of trying to celebrate and he's kind of trying to, walk.
Yeah, that was incredible.
And it amazes me how we're expecting LA to play a certain way, and they didn't, and they still won.
Yeah,
and. It's typical.
Their goals
Bruce
were pretty
Arena.
Nice, still, though.
Sure, they were.
That is typical of Bruce Arena.
Sure, they were.
But yeah,
and it's a typical Bruce Arena team in its infancy, really, because they look. You have two things going on here, right? You have, and it's an interesting contrast between what NYCFC is doing and what LA is doing and what Red Bulls are doing. Red Bulls are definitely trying to take the LA model. I believe that. they're trying to build the foundation and then bring in pieces that work. Now the pieces that work that LA is bringing in are a little bit different than, the pieces that the Red Bulls are bringing in, but remember the Red Bulls, had their entire roster. I think their entire payroll right now tied up in two players last year, and one of them didn't play all that much. And then NYCFC is going for the big name European players to bring in. It's a very interesting contrast, and I actually. There's been a couple of articles about it. I talked about it a little bit in my wrap up of the Derby, and then I know Brian Lewis of the Post wrote something, I believe before the match, about how Red Bulls and NYCFC are going in different directions. By the way, if you're just joining us, that number 732-707-7994. Phone lines are open. We'll talk to whomever wants to chat with us. So keeping it going there for a little bit on that contrast. Gio dos Santos, 26 years old, comes into the league, already a high-end player, and he's already captured the hearts of LA Galaxy fans. You have Steven Gerrard, who is a different player than, is a different player than he was 5 years ago, but still is able to contribute enough to be dangerous. And then you have the best. You really have the best back line in all of the league.
No doubt. Even if you go to the bench.
Yeah, even if you go to the bench, you still have the best back line in the league because they've been together for so long that they know each other very well. And I think that's really where things are at now in this new MLS. Matt and I were talking about it a couple weeks ago. Actually, I think it was last week that we started talking about this new MLS that's being created by these names coming in, by these high-end talent coming in. Look, even the Red Bulls, Gonzalo Verón was being looked at by Manchester City, the mothership, a couple of other clubs in the Premier League, and they were going to take him. The names that Red Bull's been linked with, James McClain, they were linked with Brian Ruiz, who ended up signing with Lisbon. These names that they're linked with, they're all under 30, and they're all very high end talent with a very high ceiling. Verón's 25, and he got limited minutes, but it was still enough to see him, to see what once that front four gets on the same page, man, look out!
Just yeah, no kidding, out. Yeah. You have to wonder. I mean, you kind of wonder sometimes if they ever will get on the same page, though. Like, Kenny Keane and Dos Santos really work together, but like that's one question that I've seen asked a lot of Galaxy fans. But yeah, if they ever do, wow. I mean, LA is already easily the best offensive team. Well, not easily, but no. Best offensive team in the league.
By a long shot, they have the best attack, and that's without Dos Santos.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you look at Toronto, who can put the ball in the back of the net, but there's one player who does it. So, and a couple of other offenses as well. But, yeah, LA for sure. And, yeah, if that connection works out, then it's just going to be ridiculous.
Sure is. Oh, and by the way, you should know that NYCFC has now beaten DC United. It's a final, 3-1 in Yankee Stadium. Goals from Tommy McNamara,
of course,
David Villa, of course, assisted by Andrea Pirlo, by the way, and fan favorite Quadro Poku, assisted by Tommy Mac. And it's funny. This is the one time that Red Bulls fans wanted NYCFC to actually win a game, because it really puts the Red Bulls in a very good position to take over first in the East, especially with the way they're going. They're pretty hot. So,
and team in MLS,
truly. And what's really interesting. If we start looking at the standings and start looking at tea leaves, you have DC United who everybody has games in hand on. You have New York Red Bulls with 36 points in 22 games played. By the way, that's four games in hand on DC United. You have Columbus with 34 points in 24 games played. You have Toronto FC. By the way, we'll have Arslan Siddiqui on a little bit later to talk Toronto FC. It's an all-Canadian show tonight, apparently, except me, who's in New Jersey. We have New England with 31 points in 24 games played, and Montreal coming up just above the red line with 28 points in 21 games played. By the way, 21 games, I think, is the least games played in MLS right now, and that had to do with Champions League. So they'll be able to catch up, and I think with, let's start at that sixth spot with Montreal. Mitch, it's funny, if you had ask me if Montreal was actually was gonna do anything this year with the moves that they made, I wouldn't have been all that excited. But seeing how they're playing together and seeing how the pieces have fit, and now with the addition of Drogba, Mitch, I think they can make a run at least to mid pack in the top of the East.
Yeah, they're an interesting team, you know. They're bad on the road, but then when they go home, they're pretty decent. They're almost a team that you wonder how they keep winning. I mean, they do have good players, and they do have a good back line, which is probably what has helped them. Laurent Simon has really cemented what was, I mean, horrible last year. But I think that they're a team that Champions League run, that built something for them, and they won a lot of games where, you know, going into Azteca and drawing, if that's not a result that you can build off of, then I don't know what in Major League Soccer, what in North American soccer is. And they really rallied around that. And since, you know, it helped that they got a little bit of a break, you know, they didn't have to play MLS at the same time as Champions League, because obviously if that happened, I don't think they'd be anywhere near where they are right now. But yeah, they just keep coming, and it's been different people. I mean, Dominic Oduro, who was, you know, as someone who covered Toronto FC last year, he it's difficult to see him doing as well as he did, just because he never looked nearly that good with Toronto FC. But he's one of those players who comes in at spurts, and he's hot right now. And, you know, adding in Drogba, it should be really interesting for them.
You know, it's funny too. They finally got Ambrose Arango in, right? And I think that really helped them change the way they did things on their back line, because of his speed. And he's been playing fantastic for them. He's been dangerous every time that I've watched them. It's been a very interesting evolution with Arango. You know, he's gone from being a kind of an albatross around the neck of Montreal to being a very, very important piece.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Oh no, it's just interesting how that situation played out, and how, you know, Montreal ended up getting the player after just some ridiculousness that went on with MLS transfer dealings, but and seem to have that sorted out now finally.
Yeah, no. Oh, that was a fun week right there.
Yeah,
But very seriously, it's been an interesting. It really has been an interesting year for Montreal, especially with Champions League and all that. And I think Montreal is kind of a really dangerous team. I don't think anybody wants to play them right now. So let's talk about New England for a minute. I'm sure this will make people angry enough. I don't think New England makes the playoffs. I think that Orlando is going to catch up to them and push through. I just don't see them. I don't know, man. I don't see them doing what they need to do. And I know they did this last year, and you know, and then they brought in Jermaine Jones, but I don't think help's coming this year.
No, well, it can't really come this year, then.
Right? You know, at this point, they would have had to have made a move, and they didn't make any moves. So here we are with again New England with, you know, a half working Jermaine Jones, and Charlie Davis has cooled off. Juan Agudelo's cooled off. Lee Wen has not had a great season, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I don't see it. I don't see what everybody gets excited about New England for.
Well, I mean, last season is what they get excited about New England for, but right from the start, you know, right from those first, was it four games they lost to start the season? Something ridiculous like that. Yeah, they just came out. You know, Jermaine Jones wasn't there. He didn't even seem to be there in spirit. I don't think he's in MLS, or at least in New England, too much longer. I think he's been kind of, you know, halving it all season, and Yeah, and that kind of has set the tone for what's been a very disappointing season for New England. I don't know if I can agree with you that they don't make the playoffs, just because there's just so much talent there and so many good players, and obviously MLS Cup finalists last year, and I'm pretty sure I at least picked them to get there again. But, you know, it's going to be close. You know, I don't see them making a run up the standings like they did last year. I think that it's going to be a fight for them till the very end. And, yeah, if Orlando can put things together, you know, who knows?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think Orlando's going to get themselves, nose themselves above the red line. So we'll cover Toronto FC in next segment. We're going to skip them for a minute. So let's talk about Columbus. Currently sitting third in the East. You know, not a bad spot for them. I'm wondering, though, if they're not going to drop. I think they're going to make the playoffs. I just, again, they have some defensive issues.
Who doesn't in the East, though?
Well, I mean, who doesn't in the league? Who doesn't in the league?
But, yeah, that's fair.
You know, you can go, you can pick any given team on any given day and say, oh, look at the defensive issues, except for, you know, two or three. I think it's a tactical thing with Columbus. I can't quite put my finger on it. You know what I mean? It's something to do with the connection between the midfield and the backs.
I think you're very right. I think that's that central defensive midfielder player there that's kind of messing them up. I think when Will Trapp returned, everyone expected him to fix the problem, but he really hasn't. And they lack a player there that can kind of, you know, be that connector between the midfield and the defense. And that's, you know, if you don't have that, it's tough, because then your center backs are under more pressure, then, you know, they can't get the ball out as easy, and that leads to turnovers and then, of course, goals. And yeah, so I would agree with you that that's where the problem is in their lineup right now, because it's obviously not offensive.
No, it's not. I think Kai Kamara coming back to Columbus was a very good move, very smart move by Greg Berhalter, and really he's been used very, very well this year.
No doubt.
So going to New York Red Bulls for a second, I think there it all depends on if the attack clicks. You have the defense sorted. And if you told, and I've said this, I'll say it again here. I've said it a couple times now, but I'll say it one more time. If you told me at the beginning of the year that I'd feel comfortable with Matt Miazga and Damien Parnell as the center backs, I'm pretty sure that the rest of, you know, most Red Bulls fans and I would stand together and saying, I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Curtis and Marsh have really made some moves here that really set the Red Bulls up, not only for this season, but coming seasons. And I think that's been – I think what you've been seeing recently is the plan coming together a little bit. And that's all I'm going to say on that. Did you have anything to add on the Red Bulls?
Not particularly, although recently, you know, their recent addition of Sean Wright Phillips, I thought, you know, as everyone seemed to, that, you know, it was just a brother thing. But I really think he has something to add to that team. And, you know, I'd like to see him start more often. I mean, he obviously didn't start on the weekend, but once he came in, he was immediately impactful. And he seems to have that natural chemistry with his brother to be able to play the through balls. And, yeah, I really liked what he's brought to the table, obviously with the Premier League experience. But, yeah, I didn't expect him to be nearly as impactful as he has been for the Red Bulls. He fits into their system quite well, I think.
Well, there it is. I mean, it's speed on the wings. The Red Bulls will tear anybody up with that kind of speed. There's very few people that can keep up.
Worried about that for the weekend, to be honest, for Toronto FC.
Well, again, we'll get into that next segment. Let's save that.
Yeah.
So, and then we come to DC United. DC United has recently been called the luckiest team in MLS. By the way, their win on the weekend had one and only shot. They're the only team in MLS history to win a game by only taking one shot. And if you watch that game, it's very – man, we were talking about Montreal before. That finishing, there needs to be somebody at the end of that ball. And I think Drogba's going to kind of fit in very nicely in that situation. So, you know, you have DC, and to be honest, I wish Alec was here a little bit to talk about this. They made a really good move in Saborio, and they have a solid defense and they have solid goalkeeping from Hamid. But I wonder how much of that is being fortunate. I really wonder that. I don't want to call them lucky because that's just disrespectful. I think Ben Olsen needs to be given a little bit more credit than what he has been, for me included. I mean. Mitch, what's your take on DC?
You know, they're such an interesting team because they're a team that's winning with MLSers in a league where teams don't win with MLSers anymore. almost. I mean, there obviously are exceptions to that rule, but, you know, you look at some of the other teams in the league and they brought in a lot of high-end talent from abroad, and, you know, that's not really been the case with DC. They have a lot of guys like Rolf and DeLeon and guys who have just been big in MLS for a while. And it seems to work with them, you know. The thing is, they've been lucky. If you ask any stats people, and you know, if it's not necessarily sustainable, but man, they've been good for so long that it's almost like, well, if they're gonna fall off, like, when's it gonna happen? Because it sure hasn't happened yet. Last year they were good. This year they've been, you know, pretty good, minus today's loss to New York. Doesn't look great considering it, you know, it came against
a team with no worst defense.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I don't see them having this great fall-off that everyone thinks they have. It might be like I don't think they win the East. No, I think, like you said, the Red Bulls will catch them eventually, and potentially even, you know, one other team will pass them. But I don't see them getting even close to being worried about a playoff spot just because they are.
Look, the top two guys, top two people in the East right now, I think there was some statistician. Is that even a word?
Spit it out.
Stat guy. There it is.
Yeah, there you go.
There was some stat guy that said that the Red Bulls have a 99.1 chance of making the playoffs at this point. And, you know, DC's got to be up there in percentage-wise, too. You got to figure that even though they have all those games in hand, it's good, you know? They're a good team, and they find
ways
to win.
They won those games in hand. Their games in hand are only a problem if you haven't won them.
Oh, yeah. You know, until tonight, then where they lost 3-1 to a somewhat lesser opponent. So when we come, we're gonna take a break right here since we reached the top of the East. When we come back, we've got Arslan Siddiqui from Last Word on Sports talking Toronto FC. Phone lines are going to still be open, 732-707-7994. When we come back, we will be talking Toronto. You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsports.com.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Welcome back to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsports.com. My name's Russ McKenzie, joined once again, well, It's the first time he's ever hosted co-hosted the show, so I don't know. Joined once again tonight by Mr. Mitch Tierney of Waking the Red. We've got a great guest here for you. The one, the only, the legend, Arslan Siddiqui, covers Toronto FC for Last Word Soccer Club. How are you today, Arslan?
Good. How about you guys?
Not too bad. You know, it's funny. I'm so used to typing things at you that it's very, very weird to have you on the show. but welcome. How are things going in Toronto FC land? I know that you wrote an article recently about their defensive woes. Why don't you take me through that a little bit?
Well, first of all, such a great night listening to Mitch's beautiful voice on Last Word Soccer Club.
Thank you very much.
Oh yeah, and looking at Russell's handsome melon on Skype right now, couldn't have spent it any better.
What a way to spend a Thursday night here at Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here Last Word on Sports.com. By the way, phone lines are open, 732-707-7994.
Guys, call.
So, Toronto defense.
Yeah.
Break it down for me.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm pretty sure Mitch could elaborate on this for days, and we both could just talk about it for the next 2 hours. But, you know, obviously in the offseason, they added, you know, Jovinko and Altidore and whatnot, and it's kind of frustrating that they didn't pay enough attention to the back line. Now, they added Kantari, and he's played Ahmed Kantari from League One. He's got a pretty good resume, as Mitch can tell you as well. He played in League Two, helped promote his team from League Two to League One, and then got relegated again. So, I mean, like, you know, there's good and bad there. But definitely experienced Moroccan international. He's played 3 games and he's looked really bad so far. But, I mean, it's got to be a timing thing. And it's just, I don't know, like, depth is non-existent in the back line right now. That's the biggest thing is, now, obviously, Nick Haglund is back from, I believe he had injury, right, Mitch?
Yeah, he had appendicitis, or, like, his appendix removed, emergency.
Oh, that's a fun time.
Yeah.
So Haglund's back, but the thing is, Haglund's not even played this year, and it's crazy because last year under Ryan Nelson, he played a lot. I think he was like Rookie of the Year candidate, wasn't he last year?
For a while, people were talking about that. Yeah, I don't know if he was up there towards the end because he kind of fell off towards the end of the season. But yeah, that was a conversation that was had.
Yeah, and this year he's just sort of like he's been nowhere. And I was writing about this in my article, and I believe what it is just Vanny just likes Zavaleta way more. And Zavaleta's not been bad, but he's a bit inconsistent. He'll have a little bit of a hiccup here and there. But the back line, other than Justin Morrow and surprisingly Morgan this year, Ashton Morgan, Toronto native, who's funny enough, like the longest serving Toronto FC player now, which is hilarious. But he's been really good. And those two have been the most reliable thing in the back line. And other than that, it's been up and down. Even Damien Perkey, who was their big off-season defensive signing, he's kind of been up and down. Just from the beginning, Toronto didn't really put enough attention to the attack. I mean, the defense, sorry. As you can tell, even Stephen Caldwell, they started the season hoping Caldwell and Perkey would be their starting center backs, and Caldwell retires halfway into the season. That just kind of sums everything up, really.
Yeah, the one place I would, I don't know if I disagree with you, though, but I think One reason it's been so bad is just been like consistency in terms of who's been playing with who. Like, when was the last time they had the ideal four at the back? And I know that's not an excuse, and I know that can never be an excuse for like any soccer team because you have to have depth. But they haven't had the same back four. They haven't had, you know, Morrow, Perkis, I guess Kantari now, but Caldwell before he retired, and then Morgan on the other side. They rarely have that, and not only that, they rarely have the same back four for 2 games in a row, and that's got to be hard. I mean, when you ask the players at training and such, they'll always be like, "Oh, we don't really care who we play with. Like, we're like everybody here is good." But that's got to be just the political response. It's got to be difficult. You have to think to play with that many different people.
Yeah, you know what? I actually agree with you. I actually agree 100%. Just to give you an idea, in the last, let's do last four games, either Morgan's been injured, Morgan's been injured, or Morrow's been rested, or Kantari hasn't made like his debut, or he's just made his debut, or Zavaleta's been in, or Pricky's been injured. So that's just that. Yeah, it's been very volatile. But
injured and suspended.
Yeah. So I guess what I wish was maybe if TFC kind of thought about the defensive position more in the offseason before everything started, so they could have settled in and not had to worry about this now.
You know, it's interesting that you guys bring up the stability, because we were talking about this in the first segment that and just comparing. Look, everybody's going to compare it to the best, right? Any center back tandem, any back four is going to be compared to the best, which hands down is Los Angeles, right? That back four has been together for years. It's very steady, with the exception of a few injuries, and they're able to plug a piece in that has also been there for a long time. Stability in the back line is so key, and you know, for any team at all, and I agree that that's probably where Toronto's biggest issue is. So, just to follow up with that, ideally, who is your best back four?
Mitch Gill, you go on that.
Well, it's probably the one I mentioned. You'll have Morrow at right back, and then Kantari and Parkis at center, and then Morgan at left back. But, you know, it's really because Morrow is already playing out of position for Morgan, and it's really convoluted at this point. It's hard to tell because, as Arslan said, Kantari's been quite disappointing. I mean, it's hard to fault him for, you know, three MLS games. You know, it's hard to make an impact in just three games, especially as a defender where, you know, you're not in here just to score goals and stuff. You have to keep them out as well. And he comes into a pretty volatile situation on the back line. That's pretty hard to correct that right away. But, he hasn't been nearly as good as, I guess, advertised.
Yeah.
So looking at this, Arslan, who... You know, you guys made a relatively big signing from the perspective of the your neighbors to the south. Hercules Gomez signed as a not a designated player. Very very shrewd, very very good move, I think, by MLSE. So where does Herc fit? Where does Mr. Gomez fit? Because you know, he's coming from Liga MX.
So, essentially, leading up to transfer deadline, we were, you know, the talk around the press and all the writers and everything was that, oh, depth at fullback isn't much. We need more defense. And then MLSE stepped up to the plate and delivered with another striker. You know, it kind of made sense, I guess, because Moore has, I don't know what he did to his ankle or his foot. I think it's a broken foot or something. I don't know. He had a cast on. That's why I remember seeing him and pointing and being like, oh, he has a cast. So that's why he didn't play today while we were in the dressing rooms. But, you know, Gomez is obviously a good level player. And I just think he's in there for depth. I mean, let's be honest. He's not going to start ahead of Jovinko or Josie. Now, there's been a lot of talk about how people were disappointed with Josie, but I still think Josie's been good when he's fit. I mean, Josie had a muscle injury. Those things are hard to come back from. Just ask Daniel Sturridge. Yeah. Sorry, my Euro snob came out there. But,
no, it's
But, you know, muscle injuries are just difficult to come back from, and it's going to take him a while to settle down. I know he's been historically inconsistent, but that strength, the top of the field, you can't sit that, you know? So... Herc might come in late game subs. Maybe some games he'd start when Josie's injured or decides to stamp on someone for no apparent reason and get a red card. But Russ, you okay there?
Oh, that's great.
That was a pretty evil laugh.
Man,
yeah, that was
Russ
really
is still mad that New York didn't get him.
No, yeah. No, not really. Not really. I think we're doing just fine.
By the way, I wanted to reveal to everybody that Mitch has a sprite problem.
A sprite problem?
a sprite problem. This guy
is sprite some sort of weird Canadian drug, or is, are we talking the actual
like,
soda?
We're talking soda. Like okay. We get to the THC games, and like you know how people drink coffee usually, like a coffee game. Yeah. Like by the time like if I was drinking coffee, if I put one down, like Mitch has got like two sprites down the pipe. Like this guy is just having it.
No, man, I drink two Red Bulls every game. I drink one before the game starts and one at the, and one after the second half starts.
Well, because you're gonna play, right?
Yeah, totally. That's exactly what my plan is.
Guys, gotta get pumped up and watch the game.
Damn it, you caught me.
Well, a couple more injuries at center back there, Arson. We could probably get ourselves in for TFC.
Oh man, yeah, dude. You can take Perky's role. I think you can be I think you have a mean streak. You can do that. And I'll play Kantari since I can't play anything in the air. Done.
So there was an interesting article that came out recently that on MLSsoccer.com that asked the question is Giovinco better without Bradley and Altidore on the field?
Yeah, I saw that headline. I was like, this is stupid. I'm not reading it.
Really? So
yeah, I mean,
Walk me through it.
Okay, well, I mean, I want to hear what Mitch is going to say after, but now, let's be honest. For most of the season, we have not gotten to watch all Altidore, Bradley, and Giovinco on the field. It's mostly been Bradley and Giovinco together. And those two, when they play, oh my God, it's awesome. It's like... Like, Bradley just drives through the midfield, especially since he doesn't have to play holding midfield anymore. He just drives right down the middle, and he's just running through people, and then Giovinco is, like, interchanging with him. Like, it's dynamic. I think Bradley is awesome. I love watching Michael Bradley for Toronto FC, and I think he's been awesome for Toronto FC, and the fact that, if he's not on the team, Giovinco... Just because Giovinco is scoring all the goals doesn't mean... That, like, he doesn't need Bradley with him. Like, let's be honest. I mean, maybe the stats don't say it, but Bradley and even Altidore add another dimension to this team. And if you think, you know, you could just have Giovinco alone, like, it's not going to work for long. I don't know. What do you think, Mitch?
Well, you know, maybe Giovinco's better when, you know, those players are away, but Toronto FC sure aren't. I think that, you know, Toronto, going into the season, they built the team around the DPs, obviously, and they built the DPs as kind of like a spine. That was the way they were looking at it. They were initially Bradley was meant to be a holding midfielder, Giovinco was going to be the 10, and then Altidore was going to be up front as the out and out striker. That's not quite how it's worked. They moved Bradley up, and they kind of moved Giovinco up too, as you know, a pairing with Altidore rather than playing behind him. But you know, when these three players have played together, they've looked pretty dynamic most times. And, you know, you look at a game like earlier in the season, Montreal, where it was either 3-0 or I believe 3-1, and all three designated players scored. And, you know, that's probably the tip of the iceberg. But, man, when they play together, they were built to play together, and they do play together very, very well. Even this weekend, you know, the goal they scored, that was one of the best goals Toronto FC's ever scored right after the restart. And it was the chemistry between Bradley and Giovinco. It was nice passing, and that was throughout the game, even some of the chances missed. I know late in the game, Giovinco played a ball over the top that Bradley hit first time wide, but it was a perfect ball. And when Giovinco has players like that around him, it's easier for him to like find space, because you have to watch Bradley and Altidore. If he does nothing else, he creates space in games, because you know you have to watch Altidore.
Yep. Altidore is super jacked. Like, I would not want to defend him. He's a beast.
He's kind of scary.
Yeah, he's a
like,
beast.
If you meet him in real life, he's even more... Like, he's bigger than he looks on
yeah,
TV.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Mitch and I, when we're doing post-game interviews, we just stand there like, okay, I don't want to screw with him.
Well, he's funny.
And it's funny because he sits right beside Perky, and Perky's like, oh my God, I don't want to talk to that guy. Like, he's scary. He's scary. After that New York City FC game where he got into it with, I don't know, that irrelevant New York
Jacobson.
City FC defender, whatever his name is.
Awesome.
Yeah. he was hammering his locker. I'm pretty sure someone asked him, like, do you want to speak today? And he was just like, no, I do not want to talk today. And his French accent was just, yeah, you don't want to mess with that guy. Anyways, yeah.
You know, Altidore's made a name for himself being being a physical striker. He's been a tremendous presence. And you know, despite his inconsistencies, it's the potential that you're paying for with Altidore. The potential for that game changing power to head at goal, you know. I also appreciate that you know, that Toronto has figured out that Josie needs the ball at his feet, not at his head. That was a problem at Sunderland, but you know, winning was a problem at Sunderland. You know, looking at Josie, I think that, to be honest, I think that the pressure of the U.S. national team maybe has gotten to him, and maybe has gotten in his head a little bit. And I think that if he focuses on club play for now, because that's really all he's, I really don't think he's going to get called for the Confed Cup play in, which actually makes it better for Toronto, to be honest. They're not going to lose two huge pieces in the middle of a playoff chase, you know. So looking at this weekend, you guys are coming into Toronto FC's coming into Red Bull Arena. New York Red Bulls have won, I think it was five of the last seven matches, and they've only lost one of their last seven, and it's you know, they're the hottest team in MLS. You're coming into a hostile environment. Guys, take me through the keys to beating the New York Red Bulls.
One thing before we start that, I wanted to bring up something I've noticed in the last like 2 months or so with TFC.
I'm not addicted to Sprite.
Bringing it back.
Yes,
Mitch.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You have a Sprite problem, Mitch, but it's okay. I'm here for you. You can talk to me about it.
Okay.
But anyways, in the last eight home games, TFC has conceded six goals.
Yeah.
In the last, what was it? Oh man, I wrote this in my article. I think it was the last five games have conceded 15 goals. Last five away games.
That's so not good.
Yeah. So what I'm asking is, like, is this Toronto FC team got an issue with like defending on the road, or just defending at, like, you know, in general?
That's a good question. That's a great question. And if, on the surface, I would say defending in general. But again, I have not watched a lot of Toronto, other than to see Giovinco being brilliant. By the way, if Giovinco does not win MLS MVP, that's just a crying shame.
No, Frank Lampard won it. What are you talking about?
Don't even start. Can we just turn it back to last weekend just for 1 minute?
Sure.
Just for 1 minute. Frank Lampard, multi-million dollar player, gets nutmegged by Mike Grella from Long Island, who makes 60 grand a year. Just let's ponder that for a minute. By the way, the phone number here, 732-707-7994. We're talking Toronto FC. You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. So let's talk about the keys to beating New York Red Bulls, guys. How does Toronto come into Red Bull Arena when they've had difficulty on the road? How do they break through? How do they stop New York Red Bulls' high press?
They've been working on it all week in training. I know that. They're obviously, it's very much counterattack based. They're trying to hit. I think from what I've heard, they're trying to get Bradley out a little bit wider so they can hit Bradley on the one side and Giovinco on the other, and then build to Altidore from there. But yeah, it's obviously all they've been working on in training so far this week. It's been so maybe we'll be in for another 4-4 game here, because they'll break the high press, but then forget about defending again, as they seem to sometimes.
All right, so well, what do you think?
Damien Priqui's not playing again, right?
No. Yeah, he's out with injury confirmed.
That's scary. And they were thinking about resting Kantari. I don't know. I saw something you tweeted today.
Yeah, that's a possibility just because he's played 120 minutes since coming over. Oh, my God. That's a lot in the first. So how do you like a Haglund Zavaleta at back line?
I don't. No.
Well, you have to play Mal Simonen. He's healthy, too.
Haglund's literally played a half a game this year, I swear. And Zavaleta. Okay, honestly, I've watched Zavaleta for quite a while, and you know, you watch him in a game and you're like, oh, that's cool. That's really cool. He does some really nice things and, you know, he does his job really well. But then there'll be that one moment where he just, big gaff. You know what I mean? And I don't know, him and Haglund being the back is going to be scary. I think they'll probably push Kantari for this week, probably. Mm. Morrow is going to be back and I believe Ashton Morgan will probably play. But again, you know, not a familiar back four, and I hope they can move the ball quick enough and get it out in space. That's going to be... I just hope it's not one of those games where, you know, Kantari gets the ball and just boots it up the field to the wing, and then it's like, Jovenko, why don't you chase a long ball? But that might have to be the game plan until it works, I guess. But, man...
Go ahead.
Yeah. New York is a solid team. It's going to be a tough game, and... going to be a very tough game. That's all I can really say. The defense is going to have to be key. I mean, the likes of... is Cheru back this weekend? Can't remember.
I believe so. As far as I know, he's back.
If you've got Cheru, Warner, and Osorio, those three are going to have to be solid. If Delgado plays, I don't know. Delgado's been fantastic this year. After coming back from the U20 World Cup... he's honestly been fantastic for Toronto FC. He's such a smart player. He never takes the ball and just throws it away. Just great in possession, isn't a liability, and it's crazy that he's just 20. Or 19, sorry, whatever he is. He's really young, and it's just impressive. But the key is going to be that midfield and how well they can defend and retain the ball, and yeah, it's going to be a tough game.
So here's an interesting... An interesting question that was tweeted out by Kurt Larson earlier. If Toronto does, in fact, lose at Red Bull Arena this weekend, do they have a chance of getting to one of the top two spots in the East?
No, I don't think they do. I think, look, this Toronto FC team's... it's difficult for me to say because it's probably going to be wrong, but they're going to make the playoffs.
Okay.
That I have no doubt of.
You jinxed it, Mitch. Yeah, I hate you.
I know. They've been up and down, but there's been more up than down. So I think that continues. And I think that, you know, they'll only get better as they play more at home, as, you know, Arslan's stats kind of lend it to. But look,
That beginning road trip with that tremendous beginning road trip. By the way, doesn't it feel like the beginning of MLS season was like last year sometime? it feels so away. But very seriously, that beginning road trip. You know, you guys have a lot of games at home coming up, and I think that Toronto also. I do also think Toronto makes the playoffs. I do think that they won't, if they do lose at Red Bull Arena, the chance of them making one of the top two spots in the East is not so big. Just looking at that, guys, prediction time. What do you think the scoreline is going to be basically 9 o'clock on Saturday night?
I'll go 3-1 New York. I think, I kind of blanked on my point there earlier, but basically what I was saying was anytime Toronto FC gets that chance to, you know, go above where they are in the standings, which is usually about 4 to 5 range, anytime they get a chance to play a team that's above them and that could potentially move them up the standings, they're really good at defending teams that are behind them. Every time they've played a team that could hop them in the standings, they've won. Every time they played a team that they could hop in the standings or at least make some significant ground like they could against New York, they lose. And I think that happens again this weekend.
Iceland?
I think it's going to be like a 4-2 game. For New York, sorry.
You think it's going to be 4-2? It's going to be high scoring, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, you've got Bradley back, and he hasn't been back in a while, I feel like, for much of it. I mean, he played last weekend, but I don't know, like, seeing Bradley and Jovinko and Osler up there, I think they'll get their goals, but the defense is where the issue is going to be. And with Bradley Wright Phillips, who's such a fox in the box, it's gonna be difficult for them to defend him.
Did you just say wait? Did you just say fox in the box?
Yeah, I did. I made it up. I trademarked it right now.
That's strangely dirty.
Yeah, so, it could be taken very the wrong way.
Is it really?
Yeah, I think
it's... I was saying it innocently, man. Come on. Like, why would you do this?
No, man, I don't believe that at all. So, I do think it's going to I think we're going to see the exact opposite of what you guys are going to see. I think it's going to be like a 1-1 draw.
Could you imagine if it's a 0-0 draw? We should just never do a show ever again if that happens.
I think Toronto would take that.
0-0 would be beautiful. I would take that any time of the week. Yeah,
I'm sure that Jesse will be if that happens. Jesse will be appropriately irritated. So, Arslan, you can be read at lastwordonsports.com. Arslan here has his own podcast with us called Treble Radio. Covers Euro snobbery of all types. Can be available at lastwordonsports.com as well. Arslan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, definitely get on Treble Radio. We just sit there and talk about Russell's facial hair and Eric's dating life and Laura's life.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and sometimes we throw in some Premier League soccer. So, I mean, it's a good time. You know?
And Mitch's Sprite addiction, of course.
Yes, we should have Mitch on just so we can talk about, we can have an intervention about his Sprite addiction.
That might have to happen. Yeah, so when we come back, we're going to talk a little preview, a little bit more of the weekend in Major League Soccer. And maybe Mitch and I will get into a little bit of Canadian national team. When we come back, you're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio only here. LastWordOnSports.com. We will be right back.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Welcome back to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsports.com. My name is Russ McKenzie. You're listening to us live at lastwordonsports.com. I am, that was a great segment with Arslan Siddiqui. Apparently, you know, we find out all sorts of things about Mitch. Tierney, our special co-host tonight, guest co-host, and his behavior in the press box. My God. Your Sprite addiction's out of control. So moving right along here, our phone lines are open, 732-707-7994. Let's get into a little bit of talk about the Canadian men's national team. They have a pretty big match coming up, but, you know, just let's wrap up what happened in the Gold Cup. They didn't score a goal. They also didn't get scored on. What happened there? Because I really thought that they were going to kind of, you know, push their way out of group.
I did too. It was a bit of a shock, but you know, it was very Canadian of them. You know, they missed obviously Kyle Larin's big miss in the first game, and then conceding in the 91st minute against Jamaica, the goal that ultimately put them out, and then of course, against Costa Rica, they scored, but it was offside, and then had another one cleared off the line, and they just had a really difficult tournament. At the same time, there were some positives. You know, the 0-0 draw against Costa Rica, as an isolated result, you take that every time. That's a great, you know, Costa Rica is still a pretty good team in CONCACAF as far as it goes, and that's a pretty solid result for a Canadian team that's still building up, but the offense just wasn't there. There was no connection, really. But a lot of people will blame Benito Floro, and that's probably fair because Floro played to draw games. He didn't play to win them, and he didn't set up his roster in such a way where there was enough attacking midfielders, and instead they, you know, just kind of boot and pass and kind of skip the midfield altogether a lot of the time.
So let's look a little bit ahead now to this to this World Cup qualifier. Walk me through how they get through it.
Well, I mean, it is against Belize, so, you know, as much as they haven't scored in, you know, their last three games, they've done perfectly fine scoring against CONCACAF minnows in any incarnation of, you know, the Canadian national team. So I don't think that this is going to be a big problem for them. It will be interesting to see, I guess, who they call in. You know, will they be able to get a Will Johnson back into camp after a long time absence with his leg injury? And, you know, there's been a couple of rumors out there that maybe he's not as interested in playing for the Canadian national team as he used to be. So whether they could get him back in, Atiba Hutchinson, who's Canada's best player, and both these players are missing from the Gold Cup, so that kind of, you know, shows why Canada didn't do so well. But I think it should realistically be very easy for Canada. It's just once they get beyond Belize, yeah, then things start to get difficult. The draw didn't really help them out to get to Russia 2018.
So, you know, let's talk about roster. You got to be happy with what Kyle Aaron's been doing in Orlando. Honestly, that's probably the most promising offensive player you guys have had in a while, right?
Oh, since Dero, easily. Yeah. I don't think any. Look, I picked him to be the rookie of the year. I'm probably one of his biggest fans as far as, you know, I've boosted him since he was drafted. If you had told me he would have 11 goals at this point in the season, I would have thought you were being ridiculous. He's been way better than I think anyone, even Kyle Aaron or anyone thought he would be. And, you know, that's great news for the national team where, they obviously, as the Gold Cup showed, they're pretty goal-starved.
Well, you gotta look at it too. Look who he's playing around. I picked Kaká at the beginning of the season to be MVP. Of course, he hasn't. But you know, he's had time where it hasn't worked out that way. But he's made an impact on this league, and I think that watching him play watching him develop right next to Kaká. It's kind of, I don't want to say it's the Kaká effect. You know, everybody talked about Bradley Wright Phillips last year being part of the Henry effect. I think he's proven that he's his own man too. You know, I think it's an interesting dichotomy with Laren there. Now, will you have Will Johnson back for Belize?
In theory, I mean, he missed the Gold Cup, but the thought process there, from what I heard, was that, you know, they wanted to give him time to get settled at the club and kind of get back into his professional career before he started internationally. But, I think, you know, it's an international date. I think there's a good chance that, Will Johnson shows up, and yeah, that's all the better for the Canadian national team, who could really use a player like Will Johnson right now just to change how things have been going in the midfield.
Sure. So let's turn our thoughts and things attention. A little bit more local. Richard Cacchisi. A fellow New York Red Bull supporter was thinking about calling in, and he said he doesn't speak Canadian. some of the things that pop up on social media. Anyway, let's turn our thoughts our attention a little bit more local here. Now, you guys have the Red Bull. Toronto has Red Bulls on Saturday, and we've kind of beaten that horse to death. But let's take a look at some of the other goings on. Sporting KC, Vancouver Whitecaps presenting Sporting Kansas City. You gotta appreciate that one. They're close to the top of the league right there, and you know that could have serious serious supporter shield repercussions. Vancouver is sitting right behind DC in supporter shield standings. Sporting KC is sitting, 5 points out of first in the league, right ahead of New York Red Bulls, actually, in that supporter shield race. That could be a 6-point swing. Not only that, in the Western Conference, you have Sporting Kansas City just about the middle of the pack, and Vancouver at the top of the heap there in the Western Conference. What do you think there? How big of a game is that Vancouver Sporting Kansas City?
I think it could be a huge confidence builder for both teams. I mean, look, both teams are high flying coming into this game. Sporting Kansas City just went on the road and scored 3 against Toronto FC. And we talked about Toronto FC's defensive deficiencies, but there's still a team in this league that, you know, beating by 3 or beat, well, I guess by 2 goals, but scoring 3 goals against is a big deal. And then Vancouver won 4-0 on the weekend. So both teams are coming in with plenty of momentum, and both will really fancy themselves to get a win in this game and to move closer to the supporters' shield. And, you know, I really like what both these teams have been able to do this season. I think that they both have a lot of depth, especially defensively, they've shown this season. And, you know, it's just... this could be a nice rivalry actually between these two teams, as you know they're both getting near the top of the Western Conference.
Sure, that's at 9 p.m. on Saturday night. Another match that has some interesting weight to it is FC Dallas at LA Galaxy. I'm sorry, LA Galaxy at FC Dallas. Last I looked, Steven Gerrard's only terrible game since coming to MLS was in Houston. Texas Heat seems to wilt Englishmen. And we have FC Dallas, you know, and they're another high-flying team, man. Like, can we just marvel a little bit at Fabian Castillo? Just a little.
Fantastic, yeah. Just,
you know, when he's on, he really is one of the best players in the league, and he's so dynamic, and he's so young.
Yeah, he still has the most dribbles completed of any player in the league, and some of those dribbles have been pretty fantastic.
Oh, just the ball handling ability is out of control, and I'm definitely on the Fabian Castillo bandwagon.
Yeah. Like, I think it's good news for the league that they've been able to keep a player like that for so long. I mean, you look maybe 5 years back, he'd be gone in a second. And maybe I don't know that at this stage in his career, maybe at this stage, but like a couple years back, he would succeed in Europe that well. But now I think he might. And it's good to see that they've kept him around, though.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy that Dallas has been able to keep him, because he's such a big part of that attack. That, you know, and they're going to need those tools against an LA Galaxy team that we've talked about for weeks on this show, and you and I have talked about it multiple times tonight, that LA Galaxy is really the gold standard in ass kicking right now. So they're going to be very, very. That's going to be a very, very good matchup. It's going to be a very, very tough matchup for both teams coming, you know, again, top of the standings in the West. This right here also has supporter shield repercussions, because LA Galaxy and FC Dallas are right there, right next to each other in the standings for supporter shield. Now, Dallas has 3 games in hand on LA, but LA has 40 points and FC Dallas has 38. This could, again, you could see a 6-point swing right here, if FC Dallas is able to pull out a win. Also on Saturday, apparently, you know, all the good matchups are on Saturday. I don't know. Also on Saturday, you have Real Salt Lake and Portland again. This has different weight to it. This is who gets into the playoffs and who doesn't. I can't say that I'm I can't say that I'm totally happy with the way Portland's been playing recently. You know, we put out a power rankings at Last Word Soccer Club. We put out a power rankings every week. And a Portland fan really took it to heart that we ranked them, I think, you know, I think we ranked Colorado ahead of them on the power rankings. Yeah, just it hurt. And the main reason is it's been impossible for them to win on the road. Now that game, let's see, is at Rio Tinto. So again, yeah, they're on the road.
It's difficult to ask, yeah.
Yeah, they're on the road at Rio Tinto, and you know, Real Salt Lake loves. They thrive in that at home in that environment. So let's take a look at Sunday. Oh God, make it stop. Seattle or Orlando. Seattle, you know, I'm not sure they're going to end up. They're going to end up if it keeps going the way it's going for Seattle. They're going to end up playing the entire roster of S2. They just can't get the injury bug out. Dempsey injured in training. Chad Barrett injured during a goal celebration. Obafemi Martins has missed how many games? You know, he's missed
too many.
Too many. Marco Papa again. He's out. It's just been one thing after another for Seattle side.
They're 1 point into the playoffs now too, so it's the implications are getting a lot bigger right now. You know. Sure. Again, like a New England Revolution, potentially, Seattle Sounders, a team before the year, you tell anyone they're going to miss the playoffs, and that seems really ridiculous. But in a league like MLS, you get a couple injuries, and everything changes, really. If the injuries are to the right players, it's really difficult to recover in a salary cap league where you kind of build around a couple of players.
Now, they do have help coming in. I can't remember the name of the player they signed, but it was a defender.
Panama
captain. Yeah. So he's gonna be help as far as on the defensive end, but that attack doesn't work without Dempsey and Martins. We've seen it. When Dempsey and Martins are on the field, they're at the top of the league. When they're not, and Martins was out and Dempsey was off on international duty. They slowly have sunk to the middle. You know, they're without those two players, and don't get me wrong, Seattle's a very good team, and Siggy's a very good coach. Without those two players, they're just middling, I think. So, I think they're at home against Orlando. I don't know.
Isn't that anyone in MLS though? If you take away their best two players, they're middling.
Yeah, you know it's funny. I can't remember who said it recently. Oh, one of our colleagues. I can't remember who it was. Anyway, it's they said that the Red Bulls were one ACL tear away from middle of the pack, and whoever he was talking to said, you know, that can apply to anyone.
Yeah.
Really anyone in the league is
potentially still... LA could, you know, if maybe Keane went down, LA could probably rally around and be fine. But yeah, any other team, I think.
Yeah. Just, and that speaks to the parity of the league. Mm. Do we even want to talk about Philadelphia, Chicago?
Well, US Open Cup rematch.
Yeah, did you watch that Open Cup game?
Thankfully, no.
Yeah, neither did I. from what I was told by Fire Confidential co-host Jeff Krause, it wasn't pretty, and I totally believe that those two teams are like, you know, about as graceful as you know, a brick in a tutu.
Yeah, they're old school MLS in every bad way possible.
Yeah. You know, thank you.
All the failed DPs, all the
Who was it? I can't remember who it was that that Philly was linked to recently. It wasn't Aaron Johansson. That was RSL. It was some international, some U.S. international that was thinking about coming to MLS, and of all the places that they were thinking of, that, that he was talking that they was he was linked to was Philadelphia, and I'm like, really?
Well, I mean, if the league controls the contracts, who do you want to give it to more than Philadelphia right now? They could use anything.
Yeah, but they don't have the money for it. That's the thing. They're so cap strapped.
That's true.
Rice and Bowley's still on their payroll, and he hasn't played a game. He's played, what did he play? One game this season, and then, and then was like banished to the nether regions of you know, Chester to go sit in a corner and think about what he's done. Like the kid in the basement of the Blair Witch Project.
Did that ever come out? What exactly happened there? Because that's another one of these murky MLS situations that seem to pop up every so now or every so often.
Jim Curtin did a little dance around it.
Yeah.
I know that Sakowicz was on Soccer Morning with Jason Davis and on Sirius XM, and he did not put himself out there well. And you know, the Sons of Ben, they deserve better, and they've said that, and I believe it.
Sounds like a group of supporters up this way.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that, and so let's talk about Red Patch, right? I think with Toronto looking like they're finally going to make the playoffs, I think this roster, you know, takes away some of that bad blood. It waters it down a little bit. Look, the same people that were calling for Red Bull out recently, here in New York, you don't hear any of that narrative anymore.
No.
Because the Red Bulls are winning, and they're doing it the right way, and all the promises, everything that Jesse Marsh and Ali Curtis said at the beginning of the season, so far they've kept those promises. They took the Open Cup seriously. They took it more seriously than the series of friendlies. Hell, they put in the USL roster against Chelsea. They won, which totally just bends reality for me. You know, their priority was U.S. Open Cup, and they made sure that you know you can talk about how that friendly was the day after the U.S. Open Cup game, and that had less to do with the Austrian overlords and more to do with the fact that Philly wanted to put New York Red Bulls in a very, very poor position, and they did, You know, playing at 4 o'clock in Newark in July is not a great look.
No,
but you know, wins water down bad blood. And
I don't know that. Yeah, I don't know that in Toronto it's exactly been watered down just yet. The fans are still a little bit. You know, anytime they lose, they're still pretty jumpy. And Greg Vanney's not entirely popular here. Still, and so there's a number of players too, but yeah, they have been winning. They've been winning, and they've been flashy enough, I guess, too. That, you know, for a while last season, even when they had Defoe, you'd still hear people, like the neutral would still be saying, "Oh, they've got Defoe; they'll be fine." For weeks into their horrendous collapse, so you know, if they have something flashy enough here in Toronto, they can stay relevant for long enough that people will be happy for at least a while. But you know, if they miss the playoffs again,
oh, it's all over.
It's almost over. Yeah.
Can I ask you something? With Greg Vanney, have the echoes, the little rumblings that Robin Fraser's pulling the strings, has that started yet?
No, it hasn't.
Interesting.
I don't know if Robin Fraser would want to take credit for what's happened here yet. It's been a little up and down tactic.
That's interesting. I figured that would have started already. Anyway, you've been listening to Last Word on Sports, Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsports.com. On behalf of myself, Mitch Tierney of Waking the Red, thank you, by the way, for coming on the show with me.
Not a problem. A lot of fun.
It was a heck of a lot more interesting than me proselytizing for 90 minutes. You know, there's only so much soliloquy I can do. you can pick us up later at Podbean, at Stitcher, on iTunes. And, of course, at Last Word Soccer Club. I'm sorry, lastwordonsports.com. My name is Russ McKenzie. We will be back next week. And good night and good luck.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.